Yeah, it's Mark Cuban. I need to go to Vosleshu Bad Radio on the ticket.
Russian.
Outstanding.
It's two segments burned in one. Why Today Doesn't Suck. This afternoon at 2:50 during the Bad Radio Hardline Mix and Mingle on Sports Radio 1310 The Ticket.
Look how crazy on time we are. We are the Bob and Dan radio program out at Mavs practice. There's Sarah. So if there's Sarah,
that's one. That's one.
Yeah. Mav royalty.
Here, put that.
Want to throw on the headset and read one? Mark Cuban joins us. He's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
And I'm a poet, and I know it because my feet show it. They're Longfellows. By Norm Hitzkiss. Like stomach growls at supper time. Want signals when it's time to feed each other's hunger. A few lies for dessert, and off we go again. We are not lovers, merely dogs of habit. Returning to the same old hydrant, only to relieve ourselves. I cannot make that up.
Wow. It really says that, huh? That from the
Horizons in the Mirror.
Horizons in the Mirror.
Horizons in the Mirror by Norm Hitzkiss.
Only $2.95. What a bargain.
Back in the day. $1971 dollars. It's way different. Yep. Mark Cuban with us.
What's up, guys?
Mark, how are you, sir?
Still trembling from that poem, but I'm good.
Kind of digging the hoodie there.
Digging the hoodie.
You guys, Mav Gear. You guys sell that?
Mm-hmm. Mavgear.com.
See? You like that?
Yes, I did.
I like that, though.
That was very conversational.
All right, so the Mavs have had an interesting month, to say the least. I suppose if we wanted to designate what the month was, let's say Oklahoma City was day one of the month, and we're maybe out of it now, but it's had a couple speed bumps here after a nice rosy couple months of basketball where everything was so easy, right?
Well, that's why, you know, every game counts, because you just never know what comes up next. And, you know, obviously we can't anticipate Dirk going down, Kron going out. So it was good we got off to that good start. But, you know, hopefully the speed bumps are behind us and, you know, we're getting back. Dirk's getting back up to speed. He's not all the way there. Guys, but he's still having a big impact on the game. Guys are feeling comfortable again. And, you know, we picked up Peja, and hopefully that'll have an impact.
What's the temptation to shut Dirk down long before he wants, or longer than he wants to be shut down? As I know, when you're getting pounded by the Pacers or right. Milwaukee or whatever's going, I mean, you're losing to teams that have to make your head spin, and Dirk's like, I can go, let me back out there, probably, you know, because that's how he rolls,
right?
But you want him at 100%, so right. What's the balance there?
Well, you can't get him at 100% because you got to get back into game shape, right? So the question is, you know, is he still hurt, yes or no? And if he's still hurt, you just don't put him out there. It's just like Roddy, we've been patient. But once he's physically able, then he's got to get back on the court and get back into game speed and to, you know, game physicality, and he's still not quite there yet. I mean, that's, you know, it's like Dirk, remember Dirk in the offseason, he's got a program where he builds his way into the regular season. He builds his body. I don't think he's ever just had to, like, take 3 weeks off and then all of a sudden dive back in.
Yeah.
And so it's a real adjustment for him, and he's going through it. But, you know, fortunately, you know, even though he's not shooting as well as he normally had, he's having a positive impact on the team, and that's more important.
Your thoughts, obviously, on Tyson Chandler have to be very positive, but man, when you made that move.
I tried to tell you guys, didn't I?
Well, but you tell us that a lot.
No, I don't.
In the past.
What are you going to tell us?
I never oversell, guys. Never. I would never do that either.
But it really fits, man. Are we locking him up or what?
Locking him up?
Isn't he under a contract which ends at the end of this year?
Yes, sir. And, you know, obviously we're going to do what's best for the team. And, yeah, we like having Tyson around. But I'm not going to talk contracts or anything like that. But there's no reason not to want to keep him for a long time.
Is there a looming NBA thing going on,
too?
Oh,
my gosh.
Like,
yeah,
there's
you know
NFL.
What?
Everybody
no, there's a
NFL
big party like Saturday night down at Victory Plaza. Yeah, that's kind of looming around us.
That might be happening, but
to describe
I'm
it
sure
as
if there's a labor situation, you can't talk about it. or else David Stern will take another million.
I can't
or so
even
of
talk about
dollars.
The NFL labor situation. So
really,
yeah.
So that's why you moved to college football.
Yeah, exactly. Something to divert my attention.
Can't find me for that one.
Yeah, exactly.
Is,
no,
that, just, is that your ADD at work?
What?
Are you talking about how to fix the VCS?
What?
He's on to the next one. No, last time you were in with us, you were telling us about Death to the BCS.
Right.
I've since poured through that book very quickly.
It's a great book, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. There's some common sense to it. It's not Absolutely. Like they're reinventing the world or anything. The only thing that I had not thought of that they brought to my attention was the obvious idea of home sites through a college football playoff. I always thought you would just use the bowl games, and they said that'd be ridiculous, and I agree after reading their argument.
No, and I agree with that, too.
So tell me how – okay, because the media loves hearing 5 seconds from you and running with, okay, now Mark wants to remodel college football.
Which I do.
Okay, well, what extent?
I actually hired somebody full-time. And he's been making phone calls to every major athletic director across the country and meeting with some, sitting down and getting their temperature on a playoff and what it would take. But also looking at alternatives, recognizing that because the BCS and the relationship between the university presidents and the NCAA is so strong that we may not be able to get them just to flip a switch and say, all of a sudden, yeah, we like the idea. Jim Delaney's not all of a sudden going to say, boy, you know what, I love the idea of a college playoff now. You're right, Mark, I'm changing my mind because of you. That's
right.
Not going to happen.
Right.
So, you know, my approach to those types of scenarios is to say, okay, what are the constants and what are the variables? And the constants are they're not going to do anything that changes the bowl system. They're not going to do anything that changes the current BCS system, at least until this television contract is over.
Which is?
3-4 years.
Okay.
Multiple years. But then I said, okay, the problem with the playoff system is not – we always complain about which teams are there because it seems like not everybody has an equal chance. Right.
Right.
So go backwards. Instead of trying to extend the season, let's look what happens inside the season. And so we started doing some work. And you come to a very quick recognition that every team schedules cupcakes, a lot of cupcakes, right?
Yeah.
Merely as a way of building up their record and adding home games, right, which has a financial benefit. But from a BCS perspective, those are wide open holes. So it doesn't really matter as long as, you know, the non-qualifying teams get to play the qualifying teams and teams, you know, at some point into the season, it doesn't matter if you play those games at the end. Or if you play them earlier, it's a process of elimination. So if you have TCU playing Auburn, Alabama, Georgia, even right, sixth week of the season, seventh week, then all of a sudden you start to change who's in the BCS hunt at the end of the season, as opposed to Alabama or Auburn playing, you know, Lafayette, Louisiana.
But why would Alabama do that? Why would they move from where they currently are? Because they're right now, Alabama and Auburn are in the great. They're in the catbird seat.
Right.
They're in the big money conference, and if they win their conference games, they're going to the finals. Why would they change their ways? Isn't that the biggest problem?
Well, that is part of the problem. But you can get everybody else to participate. Well, the SEC kind of thinks they're in their own world, right?
Yes.
But at the same time, you can start to make the BCS folks do. Listen to public pressure, and if you just agree with them on the things they're religious about, that the bowl games are a unique experience for college students, that every student athlete needs to experience, that the BCS system is actually a decent system, you know, as long as the records are decent. Well, let's just agree with that and say that's a given. But they can't fight the fact that when Auburn plays 3 cupcake games or 4 cupcake games, that you can't all of a sudden say they have a tough SEC schedule and they've played the toughest schedule in the nation and that's why they deserve to be in this game. You can start to use public pressure to say, why are you even counting these games? Why are you recognizing them? Why don't you penalize the teams? And, through public pressure, I think we can start to get them to recognize that teams should be penalized by playing cupcakes, and that if they really want to get the best 2 teams, they should require them to play each other after some period during the season. So what I suggested, whether it's 1, 2, or 3 games, you pick after the 5th week of the season or 6th week of the season, instead of that 7th week cupcake game or whatever, you play pick two undefeated teams based off their BCS rankings, and they play each other. Pick two one-loss seasons, one-loss teams based off of BCS rankings, they play each other all the way down so that you've gotten to the season, you have a feel for which teams are good as opposed to preseason rankings, which are worthless, right? Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, you start to create a playoff. You inherently create a playoff that is a play-in to the final BCS standings.
So, and this is Mark Cuban, if you don't recognize the charming voice. So, why would they pay attention to your proposals more than Jim Blogger, who's been saying this for 20 years? Not that
but Jim Blogger hasn't been saying this for 20 years. That's the difference.
Well,
Jim Blogger always says, we want to create a playoff system.
Yeah.
Here's how you would do it.
Uh-huh.
Here's how you incorporate the bowls. Here's how you incorporate a playoff using the BCS games, and maybe you add a plus one. I'm saying, you know what? We're not going to get you to change your stripes, and you're not going to change BCS. We recognize that. What I'm saying is we've got these games during every team's regular season that add no value and, in essence, subtract value.
Aren't most of them in September, though?
No.
Most non-conference games, in September?
No. No, there's always the first two or three games definitely are,
uh-huh.
Right? First two games, typically. But there's always a fourth or sixth week of the season game where they want a break after, to get healthy after some in-conference games.
Okay.
So not all teams, but a lot of them do.
Sure.
And even so, there's nothing that says you couldn't accelerate or move up the in-conference games. Right. Okay. Give them one cupcake. Let them play some in-conference games, but let them play a non-conference game between a game that's determined based off their record at that point in time.
Right.
Right. A flex game. Right. So if there's no if we can get them to add flex games, then all of a sudden and have a formula for those flex games, then all of a sudden you really create a play-in.
So now Boise State does get a game of substance.
If TCU's undefeated, they get to play an undefeated team that is from an AQ school.
The other thing in this argument that's interesting to me is that we base a lot of our thoughts, and I'm trying to read this book right now that you may be aware of called The Black Swan,
mm-hmm.
which is basically about things that are, their logic is before 9/11, people could not process the possibility of 9/11.
The extreme event that's unexpected.
We go by things that we know, not by things that are possible. And I guess the thought here is we go by the system we've always known about these super conferences.
Right.
What does the dissolving, people say the Big 12 doesn't exist in 2015. Some people think it's, and it almost happened last summer.
I mean, that's a great point.
What does that do to all this?
I mean, it means that the Big 12 is just as much at risk as the SEC for somebody to come in and start stealing their best teams, right? Because at some point you bring in too much and you make it too vanilla. And you have too many teams, and the Texases and the Auburns or, pick whichever school, USC's, they say, you know what? There's no reason for us to be associated with those schools anymore. We'll create our own conference and get even more money. And that's something that's being discussed as well.
And as that happens, it would seem like as soon as people start breaking ranks is where this all starts tumbling down, right?
Exactly right. Because then all of a sudden someone says, well, why do we even need the NCAA?
Right.
Why not, I mean, we've even explored what if you paid the players? What if you said, okay, create club football on these campuses as opposed to, varsity or NCAA driven, but then you get into too many labor laws.
Mm-hmm.
In professional sports, I've learned, a guy sprains his ankle in one summer league game and he's going to sue you for disability at some point.
You're always extremely adventurous, and you are a guy who has resources to follow these adventures. I always wonder with you, because we've focused on your career pretty closely over the years, how do you decide when to go full bore into something? And let me use the other alternative, and I don't know what you would call this, but for instance, your presence in MMA.
Right.
I think initially it was taking Dana White and the UFC down, and then you sort of altered your view to, okay, well, wait a minute,
you get into the game, and you start realizing where the opportunities are.
Right.
Right. Sometimes when you look from the outside, the opportunities may appear to be A, but in reality, they're B.
Sure.
Right. And so we went into MMA, we promoted some fights, we learned what it was about, right, and recognized that there were so many people trying to promote those fights as an alternative to the UFC, we were better off supporting them rather than being one of them.
Sure.
Particularly from an HDNet perspective, which every Friday night on HDNet is MMA night, and you can watch.
I know it well.
Yeah, starting Inside MMA, which is the kind of the sports center for MMA. Those opportunities were all right there. So I can either, you know, have blinders on and say, well, this is where I started, or I could be smart and say, this is where the opportunities are. And that's what I'll do in every opportunity, right? So, you know, we started off with HDNet, and we were programming it one way, just being high definition. And as more people did programming in high definition, we knew we were always going to have to change, you know, and just live off of our programming, and that's where we are now. And then, you know, the Mavs, you start one way. When Dirk is retired, you go in another direction.
Yeah.
So, you know, I always look into something, whether it's buying a baseball team. People are like, oh, you're just kicking the tires. You don't spend $1 million, $2 million on legal fees just to kick the tires. But at least I can afford to go in there and say, okay, let's get in the game and let's see what happens. Because you just don't know. And until you're in there and you're playing and you're breaking a sweat, you really don't know. And when you just try to just guess from the outside and you know, just, well, you know, we'll see, I don't know, then you don't have enough details to really make something happen.
So has your college football ambition shifted in 6 weeks since we last
talked
to you?
No, actually, it's gotten stronger. Like I said, I wouldn't have hired somebody full-time and invested resources if I don't think there's an opportunity there. That doesn't mean I'm going to be able to, you know, to make money off of it or turn it into a big business. That's a longer haul. But I think when it's all said and done, I will have had an impact. I will have changed the game. And again, you know, what changed from day one, you know, when I first got out there, I was like, okay, we'll just spend enough money because how can, you know, if schools need money and tuition's going up, if you put money on the plate, then they've got to say yes, right? But then I didn't realize how obstinate the BCS folks were and how religious they were about it. And so then you start to realize, well, if when somebody is so stuck on one way, so stuck and so their feet are just in quicksand and they're stuck there, then you've got to find ways around them because they've committed so strongly to that position, they can't change it. And if they can't change it, there must be other opportunities, which is why we started going after the cupcakes and said, you know what, maybe we create this flex schedule environment, which becomes our play-in instead of play-off, and we get the sponsorship rights or the TV rights to it, and we pay the schools a lot of money. Maybe we have it in China. Maybe we get China to pay it off. And, you know, week five of the system, we create the China Bowl, right? And we pick four teams, and we take them over. The schools make – you start going through all those iterations and realizing that there's some unique opportunities.
So the way you talk, and you always have, though – It reminds me of I'm reading Googled right now, which perhaps you've already read, or you just lived it. But it's about the rise of Google and how they ended up making their money and all that kind of stuff. And you're probably mentioned in there somewhere. But it's doing things differently, and it scares people who are established and are already making their money in a certain way.
And you need a break. Look, Google would not be Google today if this company called Overture, which was, did you know how it's pay-per-click now when you click the advertiser?
Well, they bought them, right?
No. Yahoo bought them. The company who invented pay-per-click was a company called Overture. And Overture owned that business, the patent, everything. You cannot do pay-per-click unless you got the permission of Overture or you did a deal with them. Yahoo bought them. Now, instead of Yahoo saying, I own it, you're screwed, to Google, they said, okay, I'll license it to you for $100 million. I think it was $129 million. History changed.
Which allowed them to make billions upon billions.
And Yahoo suffered.
But
right?
My point, though, is these guys, obviously, traditional media was scared to death. Or not at first. At first, they were like, whatever, the internet. Then they became scared to death.
Right.
Sports, though, is the ultimate, and we do things this way. And that's
what everybody told me when I bought the team, and somehow, some way, I managed to do it my way.
Yeah. You know, well, you're the owner.
But now, look at them, you still
fight with the league.
Not so much.
But you
now
did.
I did, and now they listen to me.
Yeah. I'm just saying, sports, though, is the ultimate, and this is how things work. We won a championship like this in 1968.
Well, but look at things change, though.
Today.
I mean, when I came in, it was like, gosh darn it, get your butt up into the owner's box, you know, stay away from the players and this and that. Now Michael Jordan sits right next to the bench. It's the Russian Mark Cuban. It's not like, you know, everybody still hates me. It's like, you know, I had someone who works for another team, one of the coaches, come up to me and thank me. He goes, Mark, unless you started hiring all those coaches to give personal attention to players, I would not have had a job. Now every team does it. And so, look, teams haven't copied everything. I mean, we still have those chairs, you know, that only we use on the court. And I thought everybody would copy those.
Yeah, that's really – the second you did that, I thought everybody's going to do that.
I thought it seemed so
obvious. What, a couple hundred extra dollars for
– $1,200 a chair, yeah.
For – your million-dollar investment or multi-million-dollar
investment? And
actually,
the visiting team asked to asked to remove them, so now they just sit on the same seats you sat on in high school, you know, in gym class.
You wanted them removed?
Yeah.
So they wouldn't get too comfy?
Go to sleep or something out there?
I have no idea. But
bizarre.
Yeah, but, you know,
it's putting something into your investment. That's the Google thing, too, as far as their...
I mean, I went and talked to
whatever
Google.
Their campus and their
Google invited me
free
to talk to the New York office like 2 years after they had started, and they had like five people in the office, and I went in there and gave them a rah-rah about how they can beat Yahoo and how they could beat Microsoft and all these other things. And, you know, they knew they had a good product, but they had no idea how they were going to sell it and no idea whether anybody was going to listen to them when they walk in to make a sales pitch or would use their online service. And so, you know, you got to get in the game. And like I've said many, many times, when people are stuck in their ways, it usually means that there's an opportunity. And that's typically what I look for. Now, you know, a lot of times it doesn't work. Sometimes it does. Like, you know, the movie stuff, you know, putting everything in what we call Ultra VOD, releasing it 4 weeks before it's in theaters on VOD.
You were widely ridiculed when you thought of that, or at least first mentioned it.
Well, yeah, and we did it. And we're killing with it, and now people are starting to copy us, you know. And the good news is, because we own Landmark Theaters, it's very difficult for them. So we kind of have a way to protect ourselves. But now, I mean, you know, it just got mentioned in an article about the rejuvenation of independent film production, because now there's a way to do it where these guys can start making money from dollar one. So unless you go in there and try to change the game, you never know. College football, you know, maybe they, you know, 2 years from now you're saying, that guy's such a moron, he wasted money, and look what it did, nothing. But, you know, at least I'm going to give it a try.
And then the same thing as far as I'm wondering about the future of newspapers, what you see there. Obviously, they...
Actually...
You know, same thing. They weren't prepared.
Not so much that. Look, you know, people talk about companies, how they're not prepared anymore. The Internet's been around for 15 years, right? The guys who were 25 and started taking off the Internet, the guys who were 18 or women who were 18 when the Internet kicked in, or 12 for that matter, right? Now they're 27, 30, 40, 45 years old running those newspaper companies or running divisions of the news. You can't say they don't get the Internet. Everybody, you know, you can't say they don't get Facebook. There's 500 million people on Facebook. How can those, you know, you say somebody doesn't get it? So newspapers, you know, their issue wasn't about, you know, do they get it or not? Their issue was the black swan thing. They started investing and buying up each other and bringing on all this debt, thinking business isn't going to change. All of a sudden, it zigged when they zagged, and they just had all this debt that they couldn't refinance in the last financial crisis. And so now they had all this debt. Now, you know, it's like if your house is underwater, your job may be fine, but you feel like you're stuck. And that's what happened to newspapers. They got stuck with all this debt. The companies that didn't have debt, the companies that didn't overspend, they're fine. Now, circulation has gone down, but, you know, Google Maps doesn't do as well as it used to do. You know, Google Checkout hasn't done squat, you know. So even these big, you know, cool Internet companies, they have a lot of things that fail as well. So you just got to look at your strengths, play to your strengths, and you know, I think like what the Dallas Morning News did, putting it behind a paywall so that you basically have to pay it, was brilliant. Because the people who are paying money, they don't have to pay extra.
Right.
Right. If you're a subscriber, you get it for free. So all you're doing is adding value for the subscribers. The people who are just globbing on and, you know, waiting outside the buffet line for somebody to bring Jell-O that they didn't pay for, they're
okay,
they're
this
SOL.
Is interesting. You're saying brilliance, and uh-huh. That's what I love about talking with you. I can never quite predict what you're going to say about an issue.
Good.
Morning News does pay basically, and what is it, $17 a month for those who don't subscribe,
Is
basically the cost of subscription.
Right.
You don't feel the cows are already out of the barn or anything like that. They're going to take tremendous ridicule initially. I think we all agree on that, right?
Yeah, only by you guys.
By freeloaders.
By media guys who just want their work seen by as many people as possible, right? To you guys, it's, you know, it's like Howard Stern got ridiculed when he went to Sirius because not as many people are going to hear you, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So the number of listeners of Howard Stern got cut by 70% maybe,
yeah.
But his income went through the roof, right? And he found out who his fans really were, and they were willing to pay for it. In this particular case, whether it was the New York Daily News who did the same thing or the Dallas Morning News, the people that are paying for it, you're giving them more value. Who the hell cares about everybody else?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, screw them. If they want it, they'll pay for it. And it's not like they're going to lose paper subscribers, they may actually gain some paper subscribers. And if they were making enough money from advertising in the first place, they wouldn't have had to consider this.
Yes.
You know, because
the old trick about we haven't quite monetized the internet yet.
Right, right. Because
properly.
If it was easy to monetize internet traffic, all these Mishigas websites that pop up left to right that think they're going to make money off of advertising that you guys have probably been involved with,
yeah.
You know, told about, you know, looked at, that are now gone, they would have just sold advertising and paid all their bills. But they couldn't, because the ability to monetize the internet. Look, YouTube. YouTube
yeah.
can't pay their bills.
Right.
You know, I mean, if they're making money, they're barely making money years later. And so, you know, and they have to invest hundreds of millions of dollars to basically subsidize the internet video. Think about that. YouTube subsidizes the internet video of the video of the entire internet.
Yes.
They subsidize it in order to try to sell advertising.
But it's the Google story, right? It's a lot of people to use your thing, and we will figure out how to monetize it.
Well, because they have, it's just like Microsoft has the same story. Google is just like Microsoft. Well, Microsoft will figure it out because they have Windows, they have Microsoft Office, they have, you know, their corporate services, and that subsidizes, you know, the losses for Xbox. And that works for some companies. It doesn't work for all, and it doesn't work for all services. You know,
But even your thing with Broadcast.com,
uh-huh.
It wasn't, man, I'm going to make $1 billion off this, was it?
No, or, we started. No, we
I
started.
Thought it was. I want to serve the end user,
and
I'm going to try to make this
I
a great.
Hear Keith Smart and Dean Garrett play basketball.
Well, exactly. But when we started broadcast as AudioNet, it was 1995. There was no big internet tech boom, right?
Yeah,
it was like
I guess Jay Edwards. Then I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, yeah, Jay, yeah. Well, dear Jay, where are you? Back then, it was like, we have to figure out how to make money at this. And so we were selling advertising. We thought for sites like Amazon, we'd be able to put background music that would get you, you know, help you buy more. And we'd be able at some point to charge for the games. Because we didn't have envision that, oh, this big internet stock boom was going to happen. But when that happened, it was like, okay, fine. We've just got to work harder. And people don't realize our last quarter, we did like $23, $25 million in revenue. Now, that's 1998 dollars.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, $25 million in revenue for our last quarter.
Mostly advertising then, huh?
No, mostly business services, not mostly advertising.
What does that mean?
Meaning if you had a product you wanted to introduce to your entire company, rather, you know, it used to be that you would put them all in a bunch of theaters and then you would do an uplink and downlink to those theaters, kind of like a live video broadcast to those theaters. Well, we would say, you know, Intel was one of our big customers. Motorola was a big customer. When they wanted their CEO to be able to talk to all their employees at their desktop, they would hire us to come in and make it work, because back then no one else was able to do broadcast to 1,000 people in video. So our big competition wasn't a sports website. Our big competition was Akamai.
Huh.
And that's how we made our money.
Mark, love it. We could do this for hours, but the big German is behind you. So no, not
who?
Not literally behind you. And you have to figure out which big German it is. Mark, always a pleasure, sir.
All right, guys. Enjoyed it.
Go Mavs. Good
Thanks.
Times.
Thanks, guys. And Norm, thank you for that special moment.
No doubt. There's a lot more where that came from. All right. It is a 1:19.